This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today we're talking about a bill working its way through the Indiana State House that could change the way disputes are handled involving special education. There's a lot going on here, and so to help us break it down before we dive deeper, we're joined by Lee Gaines, investigative education reporter at WFYI. Thank you so much for joining us, Lee.
Happy to be here.
Okay, so there is a lot going on. I was reading your story on this, and I'm trying to understand here the broad sense of what this part of the bill we're talking about is and what specific elements are there.
Yeah, so this is a huge piece of legislation, but the part that we're concerned with is the part that has to do with resolution of special education conflicts between schools and families. So one of the big things that this bill proposes to do is prohibit schools from asking parents to sign non-disclosure, non-disparagement, or confidentiality agreements in a due process hearing or a resolution to a due process hearing, so a settlement. And so just to quickly explain for listeners who might have no idea what a due process hearing is, it's a legal proceeding, kind of like a lawsuit. And it's typically seen as a last resort for parents if they believe that their school isn't providing an appropriate education to their child. So most of the time, these requests for due process are settled before they reach a hearing. And schools will often request that parents sign NDAs as a condition of their settlement agreements. And this is something that advocates say is problematic because it prevents parents of children with disabilities from talking to each other about their cases with schools. And also those parents can live under the fear that if they violate that agreement, the school could take them to court. So that's why Representative Ed Clear included this provision in this bill. But it's super unique. In my reporting, I haven't been able to find any other states that have proposed or passed similar restrictions on NDAs. And then the other big component to mention has to do with due process hearings as well. And right now it's the parents, if they request a due process hearing, it's their responsibility and their attorney's responsibility to prove that the school hasn't met its legal obligation to provide an appropriate education to their child. Under this bill, that burden of proof would shift to the schools in certain situations. So meaning the school would have to prove that they did provide an appropriate education. And Indiana wouldn't be the first state to do this. A handful of states around the country have shifted the burden of proof in these cases away from parents and onto schools.
Is this something folks have been pushing to see change in for a long time here in Indiana?
You know, the roots of this date back several years. It's something advocates for families of students with disabilities have long wanted the legislature to take action on. And there was something called the Education Dispute Resolution Working Group, which included lots of people from the special education world in Indiana. And they came up with some recommendations in late 2019. But interestingly, the report from that group said that they should continue to study the NDA issue. It didn't actually recommend any action on it. But yeah, the short answer to your question is yes, advocates for families have wanted this legislation for a while.
You sort of explained the NDAs and what's going on here. What would happen if this passes as it's written now? And how do the NDAs factor into it?
So as it's currently written, schools would not be able to make signing an NDA a condition of a settlement in a due process case. So to break it down a little bit more, schools will settle these disputes with parents by providing them with services and or reimbursement for services the parents have had to pay out of pocket for. So parents aren't entitled to damages, but the schools often agree to cover their attorney fees in these cases. So the school will say, we'll give you these services and this money, and in exchange, you're not allowed to talk about what we gave you. And if you do, we can take you to court and make you pay for our legal fees and other costs. Sometimes parent attorneys can negotiate these NDAs out of settlement agreements, but sometimes they can't. And no one wants to go through an actual due process hearing. You know, they are super time consuming. Sometimes they take longer than some murder trials. They cost the district a lot of money. They cost the parents a lot of money. And in the meantime, you've got a child in the balance who isn't getting their issues resolved. resolved. So both the school and the parents are incentivized to settle, even if they think they could win in a hearing. So the parent says, all right, I'll agree to this, even if I don't like the NDA, because at the end of the day, my attorney's fees are getting covered and my kid is getting the services I want them to get. So this could dramatically change the leverage schools have in these situations. And one expert I talked to thought this could disincentivize schools from settling these cases if they can't get an NDA. So maybe more of these cases will go to a hearing. And that same expert also found that schools are way more likely to win in these hearings than parents are.
What kind of testimony have lawmakers heard about this change to the NDA in this bill?
So there are definitely some common threads. On the one side, you have special education advocates, the ARC of Indiana, parents who have lived through this, and Indiana Disability Rights, that's an independent legal organization that represents families, saying, please pass this legislation. We need it. There's a power imbalance, and we need this to help families. On the other side, you have school superintendents and special education administrators who say, hey, wait a minute. These are necessary legal tools and we need them. Please don't pass this legislation.
When it comes to these two sides, is it very clear cut? You know, this side is this and the other side is arguing that, or is it more complicated than that?
I mean, everything about special education is complicated. So I can boil it down to some extent for everyone. So basically, parents and advocates who are in favor of restricting the use of NDAs say that they're problematic, one, because they prevent parents of students with disabilities from talking to other parents about what services they received from their school via due process settlement. And two, they cause families to live in fear that if they violate that portion of their agreement, they will suffer legal and financial consequences because, again, the schools could come after them. On the other side of this, school administrators say that they need these non-disclosure agreements because if parents start telling other parents what their child got in a settlement, that could lead to a flood of due process requests, which again are time consuming and really expensive. And this measure could increase special education litigation in Indiana.
Can you tell us about Carla, who you featured in your recent story about this?
So Carla is a parent from Northwest Indiana, and we didn't use her full name, and we're not naming her child's school district because she fears retaliation from the district. Her family requested a due process several years ago because she had her daughter evaluated by a neuropsychologist who said, you know, her daughter was capable of learning to read and progressing in school if she had the right types of special education supports. So Carla asked the school to provide those services, and they refused. So at the time, her daughter was in the fifth grade and she still couldn't read. So Carla gets an attorney and requests a due process hearing. The school sends over a settlement agreement right before they're about to go to hearing. And that's when she notices the NDA clause.
I really paid attention to that language and I talked to my attorney and I was like, what exactly does this mean? And he said, they do not want you to talk about the terms and conditions of the settlement forever. And I said, no, that's not right.
You brought another clip to share with us from Carla where she talks about the impact the NDA had on her family. Let's listen to that now.
It's hard not to be able to talk to other parents who are in similar situations and be as open as I would like to be. I have to really think about what I'm saying before I talk about what we've been through. It makes me feel like they still have some sort of power over me because they can still control what I say about this.
That's really powerful. What impact does it seem like this has had on Carla?
A pretty significant one. You know, she was really eager to talk to me for this story, even though she was afraid to. And even though this situation occurred years ago for her family, and that's because this NDA still hangs over her head. And we have another clip of me asking her about why it's so upsetting.
In our conversation just now, it feels like there's a level of fear that you still have.
Absolutely. What they could do, should they have reason to pursue, would be absolutely devastating to my family. yeah, they still have power.
It sounds ominous, a little threatening there for parents to be under this NDA. Do you have any sense for how many folks are out there like Carla around Indiana who are frightened into keeping quiet?
You know, it's really hard to tell because there's no public agency tracking how many, you know, tracking how many settlement agreements contain NDAs. But what I can say is that there were 84 requests for due process hearings in Indiana last year, and 81 of those were settled without a hearing. So some portion of those 81 settlements included an NDA. And I can tell you that many of the attorneys, experts, and administrators I talked to for this investigation say NDAs are common in settlement agreements. One thing that makes this even more complicated is that a lot of legal experts would tell you that the NDAs in these situations aren't even enforceable because schools are public agencies, and that makes these settlement agreements public record. The problem is that just because something is technically public doesn't mean it's easy to find. They're not posted anywhere. I've requested these agreements from multiple school districts and have so far yet to receive any of them.
So there's definitely a transparency issue there. Before we wrap up here, are some families you think okay with these NDAs, just saying like, okay, I got what I needed, don't really care what happens after this?
I think that that's absolutely true. I think for some families, you know, it doesn't really bother them. But then you have families like Carla who, you know, she said to me, the experience of raising a child with a disability is already an extremely isolating one. And then when you add an NDA to that and you restrict her and other people like her from talking to parents in similar situations, it makes it that much harder for her to cope. It makes it that much harder for her to talk about what she's been through. And she also wants to be able to tell, you know, these other families that, hey, I know the school is capable of doing this because they did it for my child. So they should also be able to do it for your child. You know, she really wants overall special education to improve for everyone, not just for her daughter.
What's next for this bill?
So this bill is due to receive a hearing tomorrow at 1:30 during the Senate's Education and Career Development Committee meeting. I expect there's going to be a lot of debate both for and against this legislation. And right now, its future is pretty uncertain.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Lee, for joining us. Lee Gaines is an investigative education reporter at WFYI. You can find her work and more from the station's education desk at WFYI.org/news. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about potential changes to the way disputes are handled around special education in Indiana. You can reach us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soap. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. Today, we're talking about potential changes to the way disputes are handled around special education in Indiana. One part of a larger bill is working its way through the State House and would impact certain parts of the process related to NDAs and who has the burden of proof. In our first segment, we heard from reporter Lee Gaines to get the big picture. Now we're joined by the author of that bill, Ed Clear, Indiana State Representative for District 72. Welcome to the program, Representative.
Thanks, Miriam. It's good to be with you.
Let's talk about House Bill 1107. It has a lot going on, but we're focusing on these two parts about special education, which we learned about in the first segment. Can you talk about where these proposed changes originated?
Well, I've been involved with these issues for several years now, and been working with the ARC of Indiana and other stakeholders. And this is our latest attempt to get something passed, and I'm glad to be working with the ARC and others again.
What is the argument against NDAs being used in these settlements?
First of all, I think there's a question as to whether they even have any meaning, because I'm hearing from attorneys and legal experts who are increasingly arguing that they are public records. Of course, they would need to be redacted, but you know, to remove any personal information. You know, they may in fact be public records. They probably are public records. In my recent research, I found that in Pennsylvania, just to use Pennsylvania as an example, they have been posting these hearing decisions in due process cases since 2006. So, you know, they are publicly available in redacted form, and anyone can look at the hearing decision and review the hearing decision, whether it's a family, media, members of the public, other schools, you know, anyone can look at those, and you know, and that's a good thing. And unfortunately, it's something we don't have here in Indiana because of these NDAs, which have a chilling effect on families learning from the experiences of other families. And these NDAs are often very punitive, from what I understand, including in many cases a liquidated damages provision, which threatens a family with financial devastation if they share their experience. So obviously, you know, we would never expect a family to share its experience unless the family wants to. But if the family wants to, then many of us believe the family should be able to share that experience. And I think we see in just about everything else that happens in schools that families learn from other families. And unfortunately, that's not the case with these due process cases.
Is there validity to the argument that this change would cause more due process requests, which would cost lots of taxpayer money?
No, not at all. You know, interestingly, in our legislation, we have tried to incentivize alternative dispute resolution, or ADR. And the way the legislation stands, parents would be required to participate in ADR in order for the burden of proof to shift to the school. As a result of that, we've actually heard from the Indiana Department of Education with some concerns about the increased cost that they may experience in administering ADR. So there are two types of ADR in these cases: mediation and then a facilitated IEP conference. And DOE again has expressed some concern that they would see a lot more ADR, which to me is not a concern. That would be, I mean, I understand from their perspective it may be a bit of a concern, but I think it's a good thing, because we want to see people use ADR as much as possible, and the bill provides for that.
What impact do you think shifting the burden of proof to schools would have?
Well, I think it would be great for families and for anyone who is concerned about special education services as well. You know, it would provide for right now the system is the system favors schools. The deck is stacked against families. You know, in every case, the school is in a position of advantage over the family, because the school has full-time staff, teachers, special education administrators, other administrators, and then counsel, including access to outside counsel. So I won't say schools have unlimited resources, but for all practical purposes, their resources are unlimited compared to families. So, you know, even the most sophisticated family is going to be at a disadvantage to a school, because families have other things to do besides record keeping. And you know, again, even a sophisticated family that is, you know, very aware of the need to keep records and, you know, is trying to document things is still likely to miss things. And then, you know, with a lot of families that may lack that sophistication, they may not have very good records at all. But the school has good records. You know, the public through tax dollars is actually paying the schools to keep these records. So, you know, I think one way to look at it is to the extent that schools are objecting to bearing the burden of proof, they're really objecting to providing information that they are already funded and that their employees are paid to keep and provide.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Ed, for joining us and giving us some insight into this bill. Ed Clear is the Indiana State Representative for District 72. Thanks so much for taking the time.
That's my pleasure, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
And you're listening to All In. We're continuing our conversation on the topic of education and the different things that are happening with this new bill that's being proposed. We're going to talk more about this bill and the potential changes written into it. And with us now, we're joined by Kim Dodson, Executive Director of the ARC of Indiana. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let's talk about, you know, we just heard two different guests on talking about this legislation and things that are happening. Why do you think it's important for these changes to happen in Indiana right now as opposed to years down the line?
Yeah, so I appreciate the question. So I think, one, there's a lot of conversation taking place right now around special education just through the pandemic. And I think we have done a lot as a state to really emphasize that students receiving special education services have wonderful opportunities available to them. We have worked really hard to make sure that they have an equal playing field in the education world and have a lot of opportunities post-graduation for them. And so I think now is the exact time we need to be talking about this because we need to make sure that families feel empowered and, most importantly, that students are receiving the resources that they need to be successful in school. And quite honestly, it's what they deserve and they have a right to be offered according to law.
What are the biggest problems you think are being addressed here from the perspectives of parents?
I think there's a big imbalance right now. I use the term, you know, David versus Goliath. I think, you know, and being a parent of a student who utilized special education services, I know firsthand how intimidating that process can be. And it starts at the very beginning of even when you walk into the room of your first case conference committee. There is, you know, one side that is numerous people talking about all the things that your child can't do. And then there you are on the side, hopefully with your significant other, talking about what you want your child to be able to do. So there's a huge imbalance. And unfortunately, not every family knows their rights, knows that they have access to resources. And so it's really families just being, you know, not in an advantageous situation when it comes to the school system.
Earlier, we heard from Lee that there were some states that have made some changes. What are those? Do you know of any other states that have passed similar bills to this one?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Indiana would be the 12th state if this was passed. New Hampshire, New Jersey, Connecticut, Illinois. I can't list, you know, all 12 of those off the top of my head, but several states have gone down this route. It's not like we're blazing new territory. New Hampshire just passed it last year, and it's very similar situated as with Indiana, with a very Republican majority in the House and Senate and a Republican governor.
I think this is one of those issues where if your children aren't in special education programs or going through that, most people don't know that this is going on. Do you think that's part of the issue here, is that it's done in such a quiet way with due process and NDAs and things like that?
Yes, certainly. I mean, there's a lot of families who don't even know the special education side of the education system, which is great for them. But for the 170,000 students in Indiana that do have a disability and are receiving services, it's very real to those families, and those families deserve to be heard, and they deserve to have an equal playing field.
Why do you think most states haven't made changes to the burden of proof for these kinds of disputes?
I just don't know if they have invested the time and energy that the state of Indiana has. I think earlier it was referenced that we had the early dispute resolution work group in 2019 that did look at these issues. And you have to keep in mind, all of that came from a group of people who were representing the schools wanting to reduce legal fees. And they thought that a way of reducing legal fees was to make the parents pay for a portion, if not all, of those legal fees. That's not allowed by federal law. And so it was through those conversations that this early dispute resolution work group came to be. And we are doing exactly what the EDR work group wanted us to do, which was to incentivize alternative dispute resolutions.
But what kind of challenges do you think it will take for this to get passed in Indiana? Or does it seem like this is really getting heard?
So I think legislators are listening for sure. I think that, again, special education has not always gotten a lot of conversation and attention. It most certainly has within the last decade. Most of it has been positive. In the last recent years is where we've really been talking about, again, the non-disclosure agreements, the early dispute resolutions, and the burden of proof shifting. So I think it's just now getting attention. And I think that legislators are hearing from more and more families that are, you know, going through this process and explaining that it's not a positive one.
Are there any parts of this bill that, or these two parts that we're talking about, are there any areas of wiggle room on there? Are there certain things you think could be switched around to alleviate concerns that folks may have?
We've been trying really hard. We've been trying. And so, you know, from the time that the bill was introduced in the House and it got its hearing in the House Education Committee, we brought together the groups that were expressing concerns. That group at the time did not include superintendents. They were not present at that first hearing, but we brought together ICASE, we brought together the school boards, we brought together the urban school districts to kind of see if there's any language. And quite honestly, good things came out of that. When this bill was introduced, it was introduced that the burden of proof shifted from the point that a complaint was filed. And end of story. Because of our conversation with those groups, we then decided, no, the right thing to do is to incentivize early dispute resolutions. And so the burden of proof in the current bill does not shift unless those alternatives are tried. And it's only if they don't, you know, bring together a positive outcome, then the burden of proof shifts if due process is filed. So really good conversation came out of that. I do think that there's just some, you know, philosophical difference, unfortunately. Some groups think that families are just, you know, sitting on the sidelines waiting for an opportunity to file a complaint. I think that is absolutely ridiculous. Families have enough to deal with when they have a student with a disability, that wanting to fight with their school is at the bottom of the list. They do not want a fight, and they certainly don't want a damaging relationship with their schools.
Do you think that there's any other way to come up with a less expensive solution when it comes to litigating these disputes?
I think the early dispute resolution alternatives absolutely will reduce costs. I think mediation and facilitated IEP both are fantastic ways to reduce litigation expenses. At the heart of the matter is you have a student who's not receiving the services they need to be successful. And so when that parent reaches out to a group, whether it's the ARC, InSource, any other group, we are talking with that parent of opening up the communication lines, right? Talk to everybody in your school that's on your team, superintendent, principal, vice principal, special ed director, you know, teacher of record, all of the teachers, so that you are trying to make sure that every possible alternative is tried before going through any type of process that includes mediation, facilitated IEP, or then due process. Our goal is to, we want to lower litigation expenses for schools, and we think incentivizing those early dispute resolutions is one way to do it.
And are you modeling this off of any other particular school district or state?
You know, at the very beginning, yes, we did. I think we, when our bill was introduced, we looked again at some of those states I referenced earlier, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Illinois, to kind of see what they did. And again, they shifted the burden of proof from the very beginning. They did not incentivize these early dispute resolutions at all. So the language as the bill reads right now, I would have to go back and check if any of those other states strongly incentivize EDR like we do. But certainly as introduced, we absolutely modeled New Hampshire and those other states.
Anna, thank you so much for joining us. Kim Dodson is the executive director of the ARC of Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking about part of a bill working its way through the Indiana State House that would change the way disputes are handled around special education in the state, specifically parts of the process related to NDAs or non-disclosure agreements, and which party has the burden of proof. We're joined now by Angie Balsley, president of the Indiana Council of Administrators of Special Education and executive director of Earlywood Educational Services. Welcome to the program, Angie.
Hi, Miriam. Thanks for having me.
So there are two distinct elements of this bill we've been talking about, one that involves NDAs and one that's about shifting the burden of proof in these cases. I want to go over NDAs first. What is your understanding of the immediate impact this change would have if it passes, just in relation to how the process works?
Well, the immediate impact would be that it would prohibit us from utilizing a common legal tool that is used in other litigation settlements. Right now, NDAs are an option as a settlement term between schools and families, and by prohibiting it in our state legislation, we would remove that tool from settlement litigation practices.
What effect would it have ultimately if the NDA changes go through?
Well, you know, that's really hard to say. Honestly, really hard to say what that would be. The ultimate effect if the NDA were to go through would be that it's a possibility that we could take the highly contextualized, highly individualized settlement terms of a special education due process hearing and open it up to the court of public opinion. And without being able to allow others to have all of the context of that student's needs and the terms of the negotiation, people could draw judgments based on the settlements without having all of the information.
What about, there's been the conversation that there's a power imbalance in favor of schools because NDAs contribute to that. Do you feel that's the case?
Certainly, it is extremely difficult to be the family member of an individual with disabilities, and coming into a case conference, as Kim shared, can be very intimidating. And, you know, we always want to educate and empower our parents with resources and knowledge. I just don't know that utilizing this technical litigation term is the best way to go about and empower our parents. I think that as both Representative Clear and Kim shared, that focus on alternative dispute resolution is where we want to focus as ICASE.
If you're listening and have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Angie Balsley, president of the Indiana Council of Administrators of Special Education and executive director of Earlywood Education Services, about a bill working its way through the Indiana State House that would change the way disputes are handled around special education in the state, specifically parts of the process related to NDAs NDAs and which party has the burden of proof. Angie, how common are lawsuits when we look at disputes around special education in Indiana? Is that like the last step, or is that something that people tend to do first?
Well, as it was shared earlier, we have approximately 100 requests for a due process hearing per year and lots of IEP meetings with families. So it is rare. And our law does not require a tiered system of resolution. So many times special educators can receive a due process hearing request, or school districts can receive it out of the blue. Others have described that as ambush litigation, meaning that there's opportunity for families to share their concerns and what they want changed in their child's IEP prior to needing to file a due process hearing request. Parents don't need to sue a school to make changes in their child's IEP generally. Again, I'm going to refer back to alternative dispute resolution and opportunities to reconvene a case conference committee to utilize a facilitated IEP meeting, having mediation. So there are steps, and many families do use those steps, and we value and appreciate having those collaborative interactions with families before we get into litigation.
So as someone myself, just looking at this from the outside here, I'm just trying to piece this all together and understand if a family is not happy with the IEP that their child is given, or it's not challenging them enough, or they feel like it's not on the right track, they have the ability to request that it's reevaluated. Is that what I'm understanding? And then if that doesn't happen, then they may go towards other measures.
Yeah, absolutely. So we always want to reconvene what is called a case conference committee meeting or an IEP meeting, and those can be requested at any point in time. By law, we're required to have them annually, but anytime any member, which is the parent, the teacher, that works with the student, wants to have another meeting, we can reconvene that meeting and address the concerns or the gaps that we feel exist for that child and make those revisions without needing to go to other forms of dispute resolution. In addition to that, I mentioned some others. The facilitated IEP and mediation are also free processes available to families and schools to work through their issues and concerns. Also, another problem with litigation is that it destroys relationships. It's very difficult for families. It's difficult for schools as well. And when we get into having attorneys involved, it makes the relationships really contentious. And so when we're able to use those other forms of dispute resolution first, we are able to preserve and repair relationships, which is not part of a litigation process.
Well, I mean, I'll say as a mama bear myself, I know how it feels when you want to make sure your kids are getting the best of everything. And sometimes there's a bit of red tape that gets in the way, and you're not getting what you want in a timely manner. With these IEP sort of reconferencing, or what you called, is that something that if somebody came in and said, I want to talk about this now, they'd have to wait a full year, or that can be at any point?
Yeah, that's a great question. That can be at any point. You know, they can request it as soon as it can get scheduled, which is generally within a couple of days. Changes can be made to an IEP, and then with parent permission, it can be implemented right away. I do want to share something, Miriam, to add context to this whole situation, and that is a term called FAPE, which is the Free and Appropriate Public Education. So IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, our federal law, requires schools to provide an appropriate education to all the children with disabilities. And as a mama bear as well, we all want the best for our child. And so schools are balancing resources and requests with the federal law that requires appropriate with a parent who wants the best. And that in itself, I think, is where a lot of these conflicts might arise, is the appropriateness of an IEP and adequateness.
Mm-hmm. Are some of these issues stemming from lack of funding for schools, or anything along those lines?
Well, so when the law was passed in 1975, IDEA, the we are promised 40% funding, and we've never come near 40% funding from the federal government. You know, if we had more funding, obviously we could hire more teachers, do more things with students. So as a member of the Council for Exceptional Children and my national organization, we've always been requesting fully fund IDEA, and many other organizations lobby for that as well, because obviously, with more funding, we can lower our caseloads, have more staff, and we would potentially avoid some of this dispute.
The burden of proof, there's potential changes to that. What impact would that have on how the disputes go in the future?
Well, Miriam, burden of proof is a technical litigation strategy. So not being an attorney, I can't speak specifically to that. But I will state that, you know, many other states do not have a change in the burden of proof. Partly that is the U.S. Supreme Court in a case, Schaefer versus Wiest, clearly stated that the burden should be on the person bringing the suit. That's also within Indiana Administrative Code, that the burden is on the person bringing the suit. So that is reason why I believe that the other states have gone with that. But as far as being a non-attorney, I can't speak to the technical aspects of what that means in the litigation process.
Is there worry, though, that if the burden of proof, let's say, is on the school, then litigation can happen left and right because, you know, you can just ask for it to be looked into?
I think a different conversation that's actually more important to this would be about narrowing the issues. So right now, as a special education director, when I receive a due process hearing request, it's a boilerplate of many different things, many different points of accusation, many different requests. The requests are unclear. And so it's almost like everything in the kitchen sink is in this boilerplate template that is utilized when the hearing is filed. So rather than talking about the strategy here of burden of proof, I think it really gets down to narrowing the issues and going into a due process hearing request, knowing specifically what the issues are and specifically what remedies are sought.
Mm. And are there specific alternatives to litigation? I know you mentioned it a little bit up top about things that could be encouraged, but maybe things that you think should be put into law to be used when certain types of disputes happen.
So, yes, Kim mentioned earlier about our dispute resolution working group, and there was a lot of energy around access to low-cost legal advocacy for families and encouraging efficient resolutions. And so more things that would more funding for Indiana Disability Rights, creating a clearinghouse of resources for families to access to educate and empower them so that they're more knowledgeable about this process and feel more confident interacting with the school. Those also were recommendations from our Education Dispute Resolution Working Group.
What does it take to get alternative methods put in place and used by folks in Indiana? Is it part of an education campaign to let them know that these methods are available? Is it making it mandated?
Well, we can't mandate it because the federal law doesn't require folks to utilize these processes in any order. So that would be against federal law to say that they must require it. But what would it require? You know, it's already in place. We already have really great mediators and facilitators for our facilitated IEP meetings. It's really an effort. And like Kim spoke to, ARC is great about encouraging families to return to the case conference table and to work through their concerns before getting to litigation. And we appreciate that. InSource is the Indiana Parent Information Network in Indiana. They're liaisons between schools and families, and they can help parents have that equal footing and a say at the table. So all of these things already exist. It's our duty as a state to make sure that parents are aware and to share these out. And something I find is a very important part of my job as a special education director, to educate the parents of their options and opportunities.
It seems like when it comes to some of these disputes, there's not sort of a gray area. It's either or. Wouldn't it be of interest to both sides to have a cheaper, more efficient process, at least in the attempt to resolve some of these issues?
Well, definitely. And I think you've heard all of us that you've had on today speak about utilizing alternative dispute resolution. Representative Clear spoke about that. Kim spoke about that. I'm speaking about that. That clearly we do want to make sure that we emphasize those strategies first. It's not only less costly, it preserves relationships. And families and schools have to continue to work together for the child throughout the lifespan of a child's education career. So we definitely want to use those strategies.
Is there an amended version of this bill that you would support?
I was part of, ICASE was part of the addition of adding the alternative dispute resolution option first, or the requirement, and I appreciate that that was added in there. I appreciate Representative Clear adding that in as well. Honestly, I believe that we just need to remove these two parts of the bill before 1107 is passed. It was the recommendation of our Education Dispute Resolution Working Group to study the appropriateness of this in the bills. So really, ICASE's position right now is that we would like these two items completely removed so that we can focus our collective energy and efforts on the alternative dispute resolution that we've been speaking of.
If both parties have an interest in not going to litigation, kind of going back to that, why does litigation happen as often as it does?
That's a great question. If we have 100 requests per year and only 5 go to a hearing, I ask that question myself, because if we can resolve these without the use of attorneys or without the use of a hearing officer — we do use attorneys in our settlement agreements — then why are we even requesting them? Why don't we use mediation more often first? I would imagine that there are times when families do feel that they have exhausted all of their options, that they've been asking for what they want for their child, and they're tired and they're frustrated, and they turn to a parent attorney to help them out with that. And then once you engage an attorney, then you end up with litigation. So that's probably why we end up with the number that we have. I do want to say, in Indiana, we have 100 a year. That is a lot for us. It's a lot less than other states. And I contributed that to our families and our schools. Hoosiers, we're collaborative. We want to work together. We want to make things right. And I just want to give credit to everybody that utilizes all of those processes in the way that they're intended.
On that note, do you think people are beginning to have more collaboration and understanding of each other and reaching sort of more understanding than disagreements, or are misunderstandings still kind of something that need to be overcome?
Well, it's always an effort to continue to understand each other, right? And I do believe that there's a great effort in that. The more that we can communicate, the more that schools can hear, parents can share, we can work together to resolve, that's going to be in the best interest of the child. And I do feel like there's good energy in that. I really kind of wished this show was about alternative dispute resolution and we could have highlighted some of the great success stories. I've been involved in probably 20 due process hearing requests in my career. I've been involved with several mediations and facilitated IEP meetings. In all but one mediation, we were able to fully resolve the parents' concerns. The facilitated IEP is a great process, and we end up with an IEP at the end. So again, I kind of wish our energy and effort here were devoted more towards that alternative dispute and understanding that better rather than these nuanced pieces of litigation.
Well, what do you think is next for this legislation? Do you anticipate it will pass?
Well, as Lee Gaines said earlier, it's going to have a hearing tomorrow, and I will be there. I'll testify and continue to share the voice of ICASE, and I'm certain others will testify as well, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Well, thank you so much, Angie. It's been a pleasure having you on. Angie Balsley is president of the Indiana Council of Administrators of Special Education and executive director of Earlywood Educational Services. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.